Okay, now, you know what, Victoria can answer any questions that you have. Thank you. Okay, now on to our two-pack, number 9 and 10. 2325, regards to Cheryl Rahal, DBM. Tracy, if you want to read.
Yes, are we going to do 2326 at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, they both have the same summary, but we'll vote separately on them.
Okay, so case 2325, Cheryl Rahal, and case 2326, Carly Hohorst. The complainant in these cases is Tiana King. On September 27th, 2021, Sammy, a two-month-old female boxer, was presented to Dr. Rahal for a second opinion for non-weight bearing on the left front limb. Radiographs were reviewed by her orthopedic surgeon, who diagnosed the dog with an avulsion fracture of the levated subglenoid tubercle. Surgery was recommended. However, a spica splint could be a secondary plan. Complainant elected the spica splint due to financial constraints. On September 29, 2021, the doctor presented Dr. Rahal for a splint placement. Dr. Rahal was unavailable, therefore Dr. Hohorst applied the splint. The following day, the dog was rechecked. On October 5, 2021, the dog was presented to Dr. Hohorst for a recheck. Complainant expressed concerns with pain and swelling of the shoulder. The splint was adjusted and the dog was discharged. The dog continued to be painful, therefore was seen again the following day. On October 11, 2021, the dog was seen at Midwestern University and was diagnosed with a left septic glenohumeral joint. The following day, the diagnosis was confirmed and the dog was hospitalized for care and treatment. And the committee concluded for case 2325 that a violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board fined ARS 3222.32, number 12, as it relates to R311.5011, for failure to show respect to the veterinarian's colleague for lack of mentoring of Dr. Hohorst, and to the animal owner for not returning the complainant's phone calls. And I will mention that the mentoring issue the investigative committee had with Dr. Rahal was not part of the original complaint, but brought forth by the complainant. The committee had become concerned after reviewing Dr. Hohorst's response to the complaint and the testimony obtained in the executive session.
Tracy, just as we review this case, is Dr. Rahal the responsible vet for the practice?
At that time, she was, I believe. And then in case 2326, the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded to dismiss that case with no violation. And the motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Okay, thank you. So we do have, in 2325, we have both the respondent and the complainant available, and the respondent's attorney as well. So I'd like to give Dr. Rahal the opportunity to come forward first, and your attorney. Thank you, and I can give you to 5 minutes to speak. So please introduce yourselves for the record.
Sure, I am Lori Brown, attorney with Gordon Reese.
Cheryl Rahal.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you all. Dr. Rahal has been practicing vet for 29 years. For 20 years, she owned and operated her own practice. In June of 2021, Dr. Rahal sold the majority of her practice to Lakefield Veterinary Group and began working part-time 2 to 3 days a week for Lakefield. A few months later, on September 27, 2021, Dr. Rahal saw the pet at issue, Sammy, on one occasion. Since Dr. Rahal only worked part-time, when the owner returned, she saw another vet in the practice, Dr. Carly Hohorst, several times thereafter. On the night of Thursday, October 7th, 2021, the owner sent a message that she wanted to talk to Dr. Rahal. On Friday morning, October 8th, the practice got back to the owner and said Dr. Rahal was not working that day. The following Monday, October 11th, was when Dr. Rahal returned to work, and she received a message from the owner. Dr. Rahal was informed by her staff that the owner had been displaying negative behaviors in the clinic and was not satisfied. So that same day, Dr. Rahal called the owner back and was informed that the owner had taken Sammy to another clinic to remove the cast and was treating Sammy. Dr. Rahal told the owner that it was best for Sammy to continue to be seen at the other clinic. A year later, in September of 2022, the owner filed a complaint about Sammy's care with the board, complaining about Dr. Rall and Dr. Hoverst. Dr. Rall timely responded to the complaint and provided a copy of her medical file and whatever else was requested by the investigator. Dr. Rall also attended the investigative committee meeting on January 10th, 2023. The notice for that meeting informed Dr. Rall that the meeting was being held for the purpose of investigating the owner's complaint, which is about Sammy's medical care. The investigating committee chairperson found that Dr. Rall provided an awesome diagnosis, as well as helped the owner in providing her non-paid for medical advice, because she had called in a favor for an orthopedic surgeon to find out, to review the x-rays. The investigative committee found that Dr. Rall did not violate the act with regard to her medical treatment of Sammy. The committee also found that Dr. Hoverst did not violate the act with regard to her medical treatment of Sammy. However, Dr. Rall was completely blindsided when the investigative committee then voted 3-1 that Dr. Rall committed an ethical violation by not properly mentoring Dr. Hoverst. The committee's recommendation to this board states that Dr. Hoverst failed to show respect to Dr. Hoverst by lack of mentoring. The recommendation also stated Dr. Rall failed to show respect to the animal owner by allegedly not returning her phone calls. Asked the failure to return the phone calls, as I explained, Dr. Rall told the committee that she had never refused to speak to the owner and never delayed calling the owner back. The medical records Dr. Rall provided the investigator demonstrate that Dr. Rall called the owner back when she received the message. And as I said earlier, Dr. Rall wasn't there on the day where the owner sent the message. She was told by the staff that she wasn't going to be there, and she returned the call on the next scheduled workday. Dr. Rall did not violate AAC R11-5011, as she was courteous, considerate, and professional in her dealings with the pet owner. Thus, the investigative committee finding has no merit. As to the mentorship issue, Dr. Rall again did not violate the Arizona Administrative Code, as she was courteous, considerate, and professional in her dealings with Dr. Hoverst. The law does not require that Dr. Rall mentor Dr. Hoverst. They both were working together one day a week. The AAC cited by the investigative committee does not mention mentorship. To add insult to injury, Dr. Rall never received any written notice of allegations of inadequate mentorship. Dr. Rall was never asked for any written response to any allegation of inadequate mentorship. The pet owner never complained about lack of mentorship of Dr. Hoverst. It's now obvious that as part of the investigative committee, Dr. Hoverst blamed Dr. Rall for any treatment issues she experienced with Sammy. But Dr. Hoverst was a licensed vet and was responsible for her own actions and treatment. But nevertheless, the investigative committee found that Dr. Rall and Dr. Hoverst did not violate the act with respect to the medical treatment of Sammy. The investigative committee's findings on mentorship make no sense. They're not reasonable, and they're not based on any legal authority, and should not be credited by this board. And Dr. Rall was deprived of due process through this process and not being provided an opportunity to respond in writing on this irrelevant side issue at the investigative committee meeting. Dr. Rall requests that the board dismiss the case against her. If the board thinks there's any merit to any of this, then Dr. Rall requests her an opportunity to respond appropriately to the allegations. Thank you.
Thank you. You may both step back. Okay, we have the complainant, Deanna King, here. I'd like to come forward. Thank you for being here. If you would state your name, and then I can give you 5 minutes to speak.
Okay. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Deanna King. I'm a doctorally prepared nurse practitioner with nearly 16 years' experience as a nurse. Had not been from my medical background, then 11-week-old Sammy may have died as a result of her life-threatening infection, the sepsis, which was not identified under the care of Dr. Hoverst or Dr. Rahal. As we know, the mortality rate for sepsis is still very high. They abandoned patient care without a referral when I tried to address ethical concerns and the infection. Fortunately, Midwestern Companion Animal Clinic had a cancellation within days, and her sepsis joint was addressed immediately. Due to the damage of the osteomyelitis, she required extensive PT to prevent amputation. As a result, she has arthritis and a permanent limb. Being able to identify an infection is a fundamental nursing skill, but I'm also not trained in veterinary medicine. Dr. Hohorst said she was experienced. Not only was Dr. Hohorst unable to identify obvious signs that infected joint, she caused intractable excruciating pain by placing hard splints over the joint. She then refused to medicate when I returned my puppy the next day over the pain. Sammy screamed repeatedly as they manipulated the splint, which could be heard in the waiting room where I stood. My several requests to medicate her were ignored. When she returned to the room with Sam, I asked why she refused pain meds, as my dog was calling out in pain. She brushed me off with a smirk. No follow-up plans were made, and Dr. Rahal ignored several of my phone calls. If I'm calling for days, and I feel like this is kind of a serious matter, her staff doesn't, you know, reach out or tell her that somebody's calling and is unhappy, then she probably should talk to her staff. She ignored several of my phone calls, and I had, you know, concerns over ethics and empathy in the plan of care. By the time she did accept my call, Sam was already being treated at Western. She was not kind. She dismissed the infection when I told her what the diagnosis was, and she told me I was never allowed, because I had too many complaints, I was never allowed back in her office. Dr. Hall still dismissed the infection. Said that these examples are violation of principles of veterinary medical ethics. I urge you both to hold Dr. Hall and Dr. Horace responsible. Veterinarians, as well as all medical professionals, are expected to collaborate and seek assistance. Education should be given to, you know, on identifying serious life-threatening infections, how to treat them, proper pain control, and signs and symptoms. Just answering to some of what the lawyer had stated. I believe she said, I removed the cast. I did not remove the cast. Midwestern removed the cast. When I brought Sammy back the next day, she didn't remove the whole splint. She just took out the area of her shoulder. I'm not sure. That was another question I had. Like, why keep that on if it's not even, I didn't know why she kept it on and just kind of made a hole where her shoulder was. I had x-rays done. I did not ask her to consult. I didn't know she was going to consult with an orthopedic surgeon. She just said, you know, we're going to have x-rays done and then they'll be read. I didn't ask her. So as far as paid for other services, she never told me that she was going to consult with an orthopedic surgeon. That's the most of it. I mean, I just, you know, I mean, this is not everything that occurred. I'm not mentioning the treatment that I felt that was kind of persistent in the office. And then during the investigative hearing, the only comment that I heard from Dr. Hoers and Dr. Carr was about medication. I was requesting medication. Sammy was in a lot of pain. I mean, I don't know if any of you I'm a nurse. I've taken care of patients with osteomyelitis. I mean, that's very painful. And as soon as she didn't require pain medication, I stopped giving her. I still have. I even brought it with me because they said I guess they were saying I was requesting too much medication. I have a whole bottle of the tramadol that, because as soon as her infection was addressed, she didn't need any pain medications anymore, really. Once she had the orthocentesis and the, you know, the pus was removed. So I just, you know, if this was me in my practice, you know, as a nurse practitioner, I couldn't just pass off blame, or, you know, if I'm licensed, then I'm licensed. And if this would be a sentinel event, and when it comes to humans, this would be a sentinel event, or a near sentinel event, because her leg was almost amputated, and I would be held responsible.
Okay. Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for her? You may step back now. Thank you. Dr. Nosley, you are the lead on both of these.
Okay, thank you. I think the first thing I'd like to point out is this issue of mentorship and the investigative committee's finding that there's a violation based on mentorship. And in my way of thinking, there is nothing in the Practice Act or the statutes regarding mentorship. And if there were, I think it would open a huge can of worms if every case that came before us, we had to look at the mentor and what their responsibilities were in it. So taking that and making a stretch to the failure to show respect for a colleague was their basis, I just can't get there. So I cannot see a reason for the violation that they found based on mentorship. And so if anybody wants to weigh in on that before we go on, I think that would be.
No, I agree. The mentorship is a very hard thing. That's more of a kind of personal business job decision. If we were to say something about mentorship, it would be just as easy to go back to the school and say you didn't teach this, so now it's the school's fault.
Back
so I think that's a very, very difficult thing. And again, it's not in statute. I don't understand where the justification was for that, but I don't see how that can be a violation of anything.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, you would like to think that more experienced doctors are willing to mentor younger doctors, because regardless of how we're trained, when you're young, you're inexperienced. That's the fact. That's not going to ever change. You need time to get more experience, and this doctor was clearly not feeling like she was experienced enough to handle this case. And she made statements to that multiple times and tried referring and tried getting help. So I feel like, is it the other doctor's responsibility to be that mentor? No. But if this doctor's not getting what she needs to find a practice that will provide that.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that happened too. So
eventually happened.
And that's the thing. I mean, new grads aren't a good fit for every clinic. Some clinics don't have anyone there that's willing to help and kind of oversee and help with some of these things, and it's unfortunate that she found herself in that position at this clinic because she wasn't getting what she needed.
And we don't have a separate license for new graduates or anything. You're licensed to do everything from day one.
She should have said no, is what
she should have said.
She could have said no.
It's up to the doctor to say.
But she was trying to help, I think.
I understand,
exactly. Point of order, Madam Chair, we've drifted to the other case.
Yes.
Well, we're doing them both together, aren't we? I mean, we're going to decide on violations separate, but we're
discussing them together.
She spoke on behalf.
Have we heard the speakers for the?
We don't have the respondent for the other one.
We don't have the other one.
Although we do have Mr. Stoll. Are you
just monitoring?
Okay, sorry.
So I think we agree in the mentorship part of this, and this is not appropriate. And sometimes things don't turn out. In this particular case, there was a lot of discussion about the mentorship and what it was going to be and what it turned out to be. Some things aren't what you think they're going to be. And so I don't see a basis for that. And then getting into the case and the medicine of it, first of all, looking at the diagnosis that was made as a fracture. I have some issues there, and I think it's possible that this was not a fracture at all. And my main basis for that is there was no radiologist who interpreted these films. And the question is, on the respondent's part, that was offered but declined. The complainant doesn't speak to that or doesn't seem to have any knowledge of that. So my concern about from there went to an orthopedist who then ultimately seems to be the basis for the diagnosis. And I think orthopedists, I'm not an orthopedist, nor am I a radiologist. I have done a lot of cases like this. I had one very similar with a tibial tuberosity, ununited, and was it separated, or was it a fracture, or was it just part of the natural growth? Because they don't fuse for 5 months or so. And so in reading his email, it seems that he was confirming the respondent's thought that this was a fracture. And he says, I can't tell right from left on the lateral views, yet on one of these views that's more stressed than the other, it seems there's more of a separation. So that's the basis for the fracture. So I'm not at all sure. And I really don't know if that really is the basis for some improper care for this dog, but had this been a radiologist looking at this, we might have gone a whole different direction, because everything cascaded from that point on. Now we're doing a splint. Now we're following up, and ultimately we have a septic joint. Was it a septic joint from the beginning? We don't know. Did it become a septic joint, and why? And so these are all questions. In terms of Dr. Rawl, she followed an acceptable medical procedure, turning the splinting over to the new graduate. That can happen. People aren't available 24/7. She was only in the practice part of the time. She did provide instruction, so I don't really have any problem with that. And then the case then went to Dr. Hohurst, who actually did the splinting, and then we had this cascading of events. I think she followed, she didn't make the diagnosis. She's just following up and doing what was necessary in her mind based upon the diagnosis. So I couldn't find any fault. If you really looked at it, she didn't at one point mention there was some effusion. Maybe we should have looked at that. I would have liked to have seen follow-up radiographs at this point, once we've moved this case down and things aren't really going right. Maybe it would have been discovered then, but as far as her medical care, along step by step, good communication, trying to do the best she could, and it seems that she did a pretty good job. The vocalization of the puppy, and we also saw the videos. In puppies, sometimes it's hard to tell why they're vocalizing. And it did have some medications. And was it painful? Yeah, it sure looked like it, but I don't know. I sympathize with the complaint of what this puppy went through. Fortunately, survived with a limp, which may have happened anyway. So with all of that, I would make in camp 23-25, Dr. Rahel, I would make a motion to dismiss with no violation.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to dismiss case 23-25. All those in favor say aye.
Madam Chair,
sorry.
Can we have some
comments.
Discussion on that? Sure. I had my big hang up with this whole case was on both of the, on the, when you read the complaint, you don't see anything about financial issues at all.
Right.
You start in on the doctor on both cases, and it immediately, oh, there's financial restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
Said who? And when it ultimately, the way this all played out, I mean, was that, did that really ever happen? Because the complaint did all this other stuff. I mean, we did the PT and the I mean, all these other things, we spent a bunch of money. Probably more than if it would have been an initial referral and went straight to an orthopedic. I mean, I think, so, I don't know, I have issues with the communications where sometimes they obviously thought this client is not gonna spend money versus the client. I kind of see as being, and listening to what you told the investigative committee is, she's frugal, but she's not cheap, and she's not trying to get out of paying anything.
I think that happens sometimes too when.
So
there's money to be spent when it's paid over time. You know what I mean? Like PT, yeah. you pay as you do it, and so you can pay over time. When you're looking at a huge surgical bill up front versus a potential splint where you can do it over time, sometimes that changes the opinion. I don't know that that's what happened,
But the surgery wasn't the next step. The next step was an orthopedic specialist.
With potential surgery, right?
Potential.
Yeah.
But maybe not.
Yeah, but now we're saying it's in the medical record. We always go back and saying if it's not in the medical record, then it didn't happen. Now that the medical record is saying, well, maybe it still didn't happen. I don't know if I can get behind that.
No, I'm just bringing it up for consideration.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying, but we get financial conversations a lot.
I have concern along the lines of communication.
Yeah.
It is in the medical record that the radiology consult was declined. That's in the medical record, number one. Then there was multiple times when Dr. Hobarts wanted this dog to go to a specialist.
And I think that's the key. Like, there were multiple times where this case could have taken a different path if we had done some, you know, if different action.
So you would ask, well, what is the reason why? And the answer would be financial. And there was some discussion from the complainant that there was...
You can't have comment during the discussion part.
That there was some financial issues.
Yeah, and I don't know how much that really plays into the case for me, the financial issues, because even if they are, I don't feel like anything. I mean, do I think this dog was misdiagnosed at the beginning? I think they were treating something that may not have been there. But what I would say, is that wrong or below the standard of care?
Right.
No. If I could make the right decision on everything I do in life, I probably wouldn't be here right now. I'd be making millions of dollars doing something else. It's not possible to think that this was, I think the care for what the information they had at the time was appropriate. And there were multiple cases where times where this could have gone a different direction had we have done something different, but it didn't. So it's not like it was wrong. It just, I don't know how to explain that really. But
this is, first of all, very rare. Second of all, we don't have anything in the medical record that goes, wow, this is looking like an infection. It wasn't hot. They didn't say it was hot. The joint, red, nothing. Ultimately, it was septic, but we're looking at particularly Dr. Hobarts here and saying, well, each step of the way, she was simply following along, trying to deal with this splinting. So I agree. Does that fall below the standard of care? Maybe the dog originally had another problem, but I don't see, just like Dr. Jane said, when we're faced with these cases, unless we get evidence to take us in another direction, we're following proper medical procedure, and I think she was in this case.
Well, and you can see that pathway in the thought process here, and
right.
that doesn't mean that something was done wrong if a diagnosis changes or something pops
Correct.
Up in a few days. I mean, it took me 3 weeks to get diagnosed with cancer when I was diagnosed, and it's like, okay, that's 3 weeks. I mean, there's a lot of things that go in with medicine, and you're not going to get an answer immediately. Sometimes you're treating, things change, they don't respond like you want to, you reassess, and you go from there. So that doesn't mean that there's a violation of the statute, it's just that's how medicine works sometimes.
Right. Okay. So, Madam Chair, I apologize for prolonging the discussion, but I did want on the record that, again, communication could have changed whether it could have changed what happened to the dog, and also could have changed whether this came here or not.
Right. Madam Chair, I agree with Mr. Loheed and thought that possibly a letter of concern regarding communication might be appropriate.
So I'll stick with my original motion that in the case of 2325, that we dismiss with no violation.
Second.
So we have a motion and a second to dismiss. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, motion carries. So now we're doing case 2326 in regards to Carly Hohorst.
Right. And I think we've covered that with the two cases being intertwined, and I would make the same motion to, in the case of 2326, to dismiss with no violation.
Okay, motion, do we have a second?
Second.
Motion and a second, any discussion on this item? Okay, all those in favor of dismissing case 2326, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you for being here. Let's try and wrap up. We're gonna do number 12, 2365, in regards to Bianca Alba, DVM. Tracy, if you can read the summary for us.
Case 2365, the defendant is the Arizona State Veterinary Medical Examining Board. The respondent is Bianca Alba, DVM. On December 14, 2022, the board voted to open investigation with respect to respondent's conduct and practice of veterinary medicine without a license. This did not go in front of the investigative committee. It came straight back to you guys for your review and consideration.
Okay, and we have the respondent available. You would like to come forward? Introduce yourself, and I can give you up to 5 minutes to speak.
Perfect. Good morning, my name is Bianca Alba. Just want to say that under no circumstances was my objective to practice without a license. I really thought that when I submitted my application, I got an email back regarding that the application was complete. I believe that was just awaiting the final exam information from the board. This has been processed in the state of California and Ohio. I at no moment was attempting to be malicious with my intent. And as previous licenses in my veterinary degree show, I followed through with all types of requirements of the licensing, including all of that, along with further training, CE, etc. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Loheed, you are the lead on this one.
Madam Chair, I'm going to make this quick and easy. I think it's obviously went the respondent was practicing without a license for 2 months. I think it was a fairly easy miss, and had repeated phone calls, had to be reminded to send in the exam, reminded there was a deadline. You know this license is only good for 30 days, so you know exactly what day it ended. If you don't have, you know, some kind of concrete affirmation that the other one is done, you don't have the license. And you know if you only got that 30 days, well, I better hurry up, get this exam done and get it sent in and whatever else. And then the fee wasn't paid. So, I mean, this is just multiple easy drops where it didn't have to happen. So.
Well, and even I would say even in her explanation, there was really no responsibility taken on her behalf. It was disappointing as well. So
Madam Chair, I'm going to move to find a violation of ARS 3222.18, specifically violating ARS 3222.31A by practicing veterinary medicine without a license October 2nd through December 5th, 2022.
Second.
A motion and a second to find a violation. All those, are we going to do?
Roll call.
Roll call.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Dr. James is an aye. Mr. Loheed?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Okay.
So the findings of fact concerning 2365 as outlined in our the investigative division report and discussed among the board your findings of fact.
Second.
Okay. Motion and a second. Roll call again.
Ms. Breaker?
Aye.
Dr. James is an aye. Mr. Lohe?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Okay, then on the fact of conclusion of law. So I would offer a consent agreement to be signed within 30 days or moved to an informal. And in that consent agreement, I don't think there's any continuing education for just paying attention and getting things done.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to offer civil penalty of $500 and 1 year probation.
Second. Okay. Madam Chair, I'd like to make.
Hold on, Tracy's.
Usually the civil penalties are paid within maybe 60 to 90 days instead of a probationary period.
Then I will amend my motion to take away the probationary period and payment within 60 days.
Second. Okay. And Madam Chair, I'd like to make a comment.
Sure.
Yes, I found the response of the respondent it was seemed to be having all kinds of mail problems, email, voicemail, snail mail, and as you pointed out, took no responsibility. So,
okay, we have a motion and a second for the consent to offer civil penalty. No further discussion. Let's do a roll call on that one again.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Dr. James is an aye. Mr. Lohe?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
And Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes. Okay, we're finished with this. Do you guys want to do a quick bathroom break before we let's do that? We'll reconvene in 5 minutes.
That's a great shiny smile.
Thank you. Thank you.